why is it that tragedy must occur for change to happen? Why can't precautions be taken to prevent disaster before it strikes? I find myself often wondering things like this in the world we live in. Then I research something and remember that I'm not alone. Nor am I the first to have thought these things, and I surely won't be the last. In 1911, New York City found itself overwhelmed with grief when a fire took the lives of over 140 people. The grief quickly turned to anger when people realized this tragedy was avoidable. Had measures just been taken beforehand, the outcome may have been different. In this episode, I cover the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire and the aftermath it had on safety in the workplace. I'm your host, Rachel Payton. Let's dive in to this episode of the Chronicles of Time. Thousands of people gather around in horror as they witness the gruesome sight. Bodies splattered on the sidewalk, with more falling by the second. A fire blazing above them. Inside the building, 500 workers are desperately trying to find a way out. Most of them do, but 146 of them will meet their end. Today was Saturday, March 25th, 1911. And the workers at the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory were about to get off. The factory was in the Ash Building, one of Manhattan's newer skyscrapers, just a half block away from Washington Square Park. The Shirtwaist Factory was specifically in the top three floors of the building, the 8th, 9th, and 10th. It employed mostly teenage immigrant girls who didn't speak much English. They worked 12-hour days for low wages in poor working conditions. But complaining about the conditions could get you fired. They had absolutely no protection. As the girls on the 8th floor were getting their coats and purses to go get checked, yes, bag checks before you left were done to ensure you didn't steal from the company. Someone smelt something burning. Within a millisecond, chaos erupted. In the panic, no one called and informed the 250 people on the 9th floor of the fire. Only the 10th floor. On the 10th floor that day, you would find the factory owners, Isaac Harris and Max Blank, as well as many workers. When they caught word of the fire, many were able to escape through the roof. Once on the roof, people from a nearby building put a ladder of sorts up to get them to safety. The people on the 8th and 9th floors wouldn't find themselves so lucky. Many began running for the exits at once, causing a crowd in the only 2.5-foot-wide staircase. Horror struck when they realized the main exit on Green Street was covered in flames. When people got to the other exit, leading to Washington Place, it was locked from the outside. Reality soon began to set in. They were trapped inside. Their only hope was the firemen to rescue them. Within 2 minutes of the fire alarm being raised, the New York Fire Department was on the scene. But this is when things went from bad to worse. Their ladders only reached up to the 6th floor. At this point, girls began jumping out of the windows, doing anything to escape the flames. Bodies were hitting the ground with such force that it was shattering partitions on the sidewalk. When firemen tried to use a net to catch the jumpers, 3 girls jumped at once and tore the net, leaving it useless. When they tried to use the water hoses, the valves were either rusty or they simply couldn't reach. But even if they could, many hoses lay with bodies covered over them. Over 20 people fled to the building's fire escape, but it quickly gave out due to all the weight. Inside the building, people piled into the elevator. But when it was the last ride down, people desperately jumped on the elevator shaft. 19 people lost their life this way. In total, 53 people would jump out of the windows, and at least 50 people would die inside of the building. All but 23 of the 146 deaths were young women, and the youngest victim was only 14 years old. Just 18 minutes after the fire had begun, it was over. The tragedy and loss that had occurred between 4:40 and 5 p.m. that day will haunt us forever. The entire city began to mourn. The 146 losses affected people greatly, whether you knew someone who had died or not. When investigating the scene, firefighters found a pile of bodies over 6 feet in height that were leading to a staircase. When the coroner came, the New York Times reported that he sobbed like a child. Makeshift wooden coffins were made and the bodies sat in them to be identified. Many bodies were only recognized by the jewelry or clothes they had on. Only 6 people wouldn't be identified. Mourning quickly turned to anger. The tragedy had people asking how something like this could even have happened. Eyes quickly turned to the factory's owners, Harris and Blank. The two men hid from the public for weeks, knowing what villains they were. Just 2 years before the fire, in 1909, a mass strike broke out throughout the city. Women from factories, including the girls at the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory, were calling for better working conditions. Nothing really came of it, and the girls eventually went back to work. But what conditions were they working under? Well, hundreds of workers would crowd onto the floors and were allowed no bathrooms. The hours were long and the pay was close to nothing. There was little to no government regulation, making the place beyond dangerous. Workers were also under extreme pressure because they were responsible for any sewing machine mishap and had to pay for any thread, needles, or even electricity that they used. They hadn't ever done a fire drill because it would interrupt work time, so they had no exit strategy. There weren't any sprinklers in the place because there wasn't a law that you had to have them. The only precautions that had been taken were 12 pails of water that some had claimed to be empty on the day of the fire. It was eventually concluded that a discarded cigarette had started the flames on that fateful day. But people wanted justice. They wanted the owners to pay for their negligence. On April 11, 1911, Harris and Blank were indicted on 7 counts of manslaughter. Questions were brought up on why the exit door was locked. Here are some supposed reasons. To keep out union organizations and to prevent the girls from skipping bag check at the end of the day. Either way, it's not okay and it's not an excuse. But after just 2 hours of deliberation, the all-male jury decided to acquit the men on all charges. The men were free to walk and, astonishingly, resume business. 23 civil suits would be brought against the men and they eventually settled. A measly $75 was paid to each of the 23 people, but no justice was ever served for the loss of 146 workers. The Shirtwaist Factory fire was a travesty that paved the way for change. We now have laws and regulations in place to ensure something like that never happens again. We have child labor laws, OSHA, and overtime laws, just to name a few. These courageous workers will never understand how much they have done. They most certainly did not die in vain. But it is up to us as people and historians to share the history that has gotten us to where we are now. Without knowing our past, how can we learn for the future? Thank you all for listening to this episode over the Shirtwaist Factory fire. If you have any questions over the episode, episode suggestions, or just want to talk history, email me at thechroniclesoftimepodcast@gmail.com. Check out all of my social media pages, my Facebook, my TikTok, my Instagram, for extra content and updates on the show. I post new blogs and YouTube videos often, and you can find all of that and more on my website at www.thechroniclesoftimepodcast.com. Again, that's www.thechroniclesoftimepodcast.com. As always, it has been a pleasure making the show for you all. Don't forget to tell your friends about the show and leave a rating and review. I'm your host, Rachel Payton, and you just listened to The Chronicles of Time.